On Sunday, January 15th at 11 p.m., Sugar in My Bowl will present a conversation with two of the curators of the Revisiting Paris Blues exhibit in Jazz at Lincoln Center, Deirdre Harris-Kelly, niece to Romare Bearden, and Robert O'Mealy, Columbia University professor and Bearden scholar. That's Sunday, January 15th at 11 p.m., right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org on the web. WBAI New York, 99.5 FM. Sugar in My Bowl. I didn't ask for that. Oh, no. Sometimes these CDs, I'll keep that on anyway. Yeah, I like that song anyway. What we're actually focusing on this evening is Romare Bearden, Sam Shaw, and Albert Murray. There's an exhibit at Jazz at Lincoln Center. It's, what is the name? Oh, yeah. There's the exhibit, Paris Blues Revisited. Remember that movie? Well, it wasn't what it was supposed to be, but the exhibit is supposed to, is trying to make it right. So, anyway, we should be starting off some way, a different way. And as soon as, there we go. We're going to start off like this. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM. Sugar in My Bowl. My name's Joyce Jones. Stay tuned. You're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, Sugar My Bowl. I am stalling. That's right, because that's the kind of evening we've got. But we've got a special show coming up, and it is special, believe me. You'll enjoy it once you actually get to hear it. But until then, we're going to listen to an old, well, not she's not old, but she was a Sugar My Bowl guest, and I want to play a little something to sort of also help get you in the mood for the upcoming program.
Good morning, heartache, you oh gloomy sight. Good morning, heartache, thought we said goodbye last night. I tossed and turned until it seemed you'd gone. But here you are with the dawn. Wish I'd forget you, but you're here to stay. It seems I met you when my love went away. Now each day I start by saying to you, good morning, heartache, what's new? Stop. Shake, you know how. Just leave me alone. I've got those Monday blues, straight through Sunday blues. Good morning, heartache, here we go again. Good morning, heartache. You're the one who knew me when. Might as well get used to your hanging round. Good morning, heartache. Sit down.
That's right. Good morning, or good evening, heartache. Gosh. Yes, this program will get started. I just am not sure how. Yeah, I'm having a sort of rocky Sunday. And I wasn't, well, that was Dee Dee Bridgewater from Eleanor Fagan to Billie Holiday from Dee Dee Bridgewater. And that was a Grammy-winning CD, and I am being challenged, but I shall overcome, and you shall have a program that you actually enjoy listening to, I promise. Let's listen to one more. This is from another participant in today's program, tonight's program. This is Sugar in My Bowl. My name's Joyce Jones. Stay tuned.
Here's one record the fans still seem to be very fond of. I made it originally with the Johnny Dodds Black Bottom Stompers in April 1927 with Earl Hines, Johnny, and Baby Dodds. Wild Man Blues. When we played the Sunset Cafe in Chicago, this tune ran so long until I'd go in the kitchen and get a sandwich and a cup of coffee and come back and play my solo, and Earl Hines would go back in the kitchen and get a order of meatball and spaghetti, a cup of coffee, and we'd all meet on the bandstand and swing out the last 8 bars.
Mama,
here's a number that's a happy, stomping thing. It's another of the old hot seven numbers, Wearied Blues. All the brass bands in New Orleans used to enjoy blowing this tune, and I used to love to see the music on my horn in my music library.
Hey!
listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, Sugar in My Bowl, and my guests are
Deidre Harris Kelly
in the studio.
I am the co-director of the Romeo Bearden Foundation here in New York City, and also one of the curators of the team at Jazz at Lincoln Center that put the show together, Paris Blues Revisited.
And on the line we have...
I'm Bob O'Mealy, on the line from Miami, Florida, but work as co-curator of exhibitions at Jazz at Lincoln Center and of the current exhibition called Paris Blues Revisited. I'm professor of English at Columbia University.
Thank you so much for joining Sugar in My Bowl for this special conversation about the Paris Blues exhibit. First off, in reading up on this, I wasn't aware, you know, I'm familiar with the film Paris Blues that had Sidney Poitier, Diane Carroll, Paul Newman, and Joanne Woodward, and Louis Armstrong, and the music was written by Duke Ellington. But I wasn't aware that the original story was supposed to be about Romare Bearden.
Originally, Sam Shaw, who was a great photographer and a great friend of the painter Romare Bearden, when he saw Bearden come back from Paris and heard him talk about being black in Paris, black American, there trying to make art, Sam Shaw, who had begun to produce movies, thought this would be a terrific idea for a movie, do a program about being a black artist in Paris. And then United Artists just didn't want to do it because it seemed to them too rarefied a subject for the late 1950s, 1960 market. And so Shaw said, well, let's try it again, this time not about a painter, but a movie about somebody trying to make art in Paris, black, and this time let's make it a musician. So that's how the idea for the movie evolved. But it's very interesting that originally it was to be about a painter, and then ultimately Shaw and the painter got together to do a Paris Blues of their own.
Yeah, Bob, could you also talk a little bit about the making of the book, like why the book was produced?
Well, that's right. It's exciting as a sort of unit for the teachers in the audience to think there's a movie, there's a score, there are these collages. But there's also a pretty good novel by Harold Flender called Paris Blues. Flender is F-L-E-N-D as in dog, E-R, Harold Flender. He was a script writer who was ambitious to be a serious novelist, and so he was quite excited when Sam Shaw said, hey, why don't you try writing a novel about this story, and then with what we've got. And so he did. He wrote this novel, and from that novel about musicians in Paris, Flender and some others worked with Shaw on a script for the movie that we have now. It's interesting because the novel as a package, I think, is just as good as the movie, although you have to leave out the Ellington score because the Ellington score is the star of that movie and Armstrong.
Right.
But if you leave that aside, it's a pretty good novel.
And that's the Ellington Strayhorn score, actually.
That's right, the Ellington Stray. It's very important. Shaw, in an interview, said later that he was always sorry that he hadn't really pressed to recognize Billy Strayhorn better because Strayhorn was right in the mix of writing that score. And if you hear it, you hear some things that you associate with Strayhorn in there. So I think that it is important that it's a two-man collaboration as far as the composition is concerned.
Does anyone know how Romare Bearden felt about the film itself? Or did he ever talk about it? Or?
Now, there, I would be guessing there. My sense from the interviews with Sam Shaw and from talking to Albert Murray, who enters the picture later, is that they were all quite disappointed in the movie, that they were excited that there was going to be a movie. In fact, Ellington had signed on because he thought it was going to be such a different script. Originally, it was going to be a movie about gay and lesbian connections. It was going to be a movie about Diane Carroll falling in love with Paul Newman and Joanne Woodward falling in love with Sidney Poitier.
Wow.
And so they were very excited at first, but then when the producers of the movie, you know, the Hollywood officials, that is, backed away from the courage that it took to do that kind of daring movie for 1959, they were all disappointed. Also, if you watch the movie, there's a theme that runs through it that says, hey, this is pretty good music that we're hearing from the jazz musician, but it's not serious music, as the big-time European composer in the movie announces.
Mm.
And I'm sure that Ellington and all of them just hated that, Strayhorn, all of them. And Bearden didn't miss a beat. He saw that and I think was quite disappointed that as good as the movie was, it really, on the whole, the storyline is a disappointment. It condescends to jazz.
So did Shaw and Murray and Romare Bearden, they were working on a book, right? This was going to be a book, Paris Blues Revisited?
Well, I think it's very important to say that the movie is 1959. It's shot. It's released in 1960, 61, I think, finally is released. And the Collages project was one they worked on in the late 70s, early 1980s, perhaps starting as late as 1981. This is 20 years later that they say, hey, let's get it right this time.
I see.
Let's pull in a writer, and we've got the photographs Sam Shaw took from the set and some other photographs, and let's get Romy involved to tell the story the way we Shaw and Bearden originally wanted it told. So it's 20 years later reflecting on a failure and trying to bring it to life from the ashes with their own hands directly on the wheel this time.
I would just sort of try to set the stage for how this might have come about in terms of the artists collaborating. Bearden met Shaw early on when they were students and they shared a studio together. And they've gone on to do other collaborations. One is the film Gloria, the Cassavetes film. Sam Shaw was the art director. And he called in his friend Romare to do the title art for that. So when you watch the film, you see city scenes and watercolor. Wow. Those are Romare's that Sam brought into that. And of course, Romare and Albert Murray were very good friends, you know, trading fours all the time and being artists, you know, and working on the titling of Bearden's work, and riffing on the ideas of jazz and music and art and all of that. So I imagine this coming together in a very natural way. Many people have asked already, was this going to be a book and is it going to be a book now? And what happened? They want to know the story. What happened? How come this is not a book? How come it fell apart? And, you know, we really don't want to focus on that, but if we have to think about it, one of the responses I have is that there were lots of collaborations between artists just like this that just go nowhere. Mm-hmm. Because Romare was doing work with dancers, choreographers, theater people. So there was a lot of projects that got left on the floor or the table or in the closet, whatever. And I just think that this is a wonderful, wonderful exhibit. It makes a very good exhibit, even if it's not a book.
Well, I understand this exhibit came out of 19 pages. Is that correct?
Well, you know, what you're seeing on the wall is a curator team's idea of what would make a good exhibition. There were lots of layouts, and we did pull together most of the finished collages, but we can't know where everything is. So, yeah, I think it could have been a much larger book, but if you think about the way books are put together in increments of 8, 16, 32, this probably was meant to be a probably 64-page book or something like that.
And this exhibit, A Jazz at Lincoln Center, is going to be there until January?
No, February 28th.
Okay.
No, that date was printed on the brochures. But as many of our exhibitions at Jazz at Lincoln Center, they've been very popular, and we have been extending the times. And this is one show that's been extended a little longer to February 28th. Because we get a lot of response from them, and this space is not the traditional gallery museum space. So we have a lot of flexibility. We get to do some wonderful shows. This is just one of, I think, seven now that we've done. We did one on Chuck Stewart's work, the photographer. We did one on Louis Armstrong's collage work.
Mm.
We did one on the album cover artist David Stone Martin. We also did a beautiful one on Herman Leonard, who passed away not long after the show
right.
was up. And then, of course, the last big, beautiful photography show we did was on Frank Stewart.
What I might say, what distinguishes this show is that these pieces, many of them, well, they've never been seen together before in public. It was a project, as Deirdre was saying, that wasn't completely realized. And so some of the pages have shown up here and there, some of them very, very finished, exquisite masterpieces that are known to the Bearden canon. And others are really have not been seen at all. And some are sketches and works in progress. And so what's exciting here in Bearden's Centennial is, okay, we've seen the Harlem pieces, but did we know there were Paris pieces?
Mm-hmm.
And did we know that there were these pieces celebrating the, you know, Montmartre in Paris, you know, and Ellington and Strayhorn and Louis over there? And so it's so thrilling to see works we've never seen before and then to see ones we did know in this new context. And once we know that part of their goal seemed to be like Duke to counterstate the smallness of the vision of the movie, and say, hey, instead of that, we see jazz as one of the great arts of the world. And so Bearden shows Duke and a above his head is the word Victor Hugo and the word Montmartre and the word Casino de Paris. Is just to say, you know, we see him, Mallarmé, in the context of great art of this period. And so it's not only, gee, we've never seen it before, but it's a sort of new page in Bearden studies and offers a new way to see, I think, Ellington, Strayhorn, Armstrong. The other thing is how exciting it is to have a great novelist like Murray and a great photographer toe-to-toe as like saxophonist with Romy Bearden. One yield of this project is a really terrific essay by Al Murray called Stomping the Blues in Paris. Part of that in the exhibition, we just put pages right on the wall, see what part he might have had in the three-person collaboration.
Yes, there's a lot of exciting aspects of this show, and I will add all of that, but I will add to that the way that we saw this collaboration was very much the way that jazz is put together, and in very improvisational music, artists coming together who are all engaged in art and jazz and who are also friends. And so it's like the ultimate jazz collaboration. And that is what we try to do in the space, is to present sort of different perspectives about the music.
And the challenge for us is, how can we put something good enough on the wall that people who have come to hear the music of Mary Lou Williams or the music of the Heath Brothers or Wynton Marsalis' new composition, how can we put something on the wall, this sort of visual equivalent of music at that high a level? And we really feel like we've gotten it. If we ever got it right, I think we so often know the shows that Deirdre mentioned, Armstrong's collages, unbelievable, and so forth. But hear them really saying, I'm an improvisational painter. Look again at these lines and colors and think about what it means to be a soloist and a player in a band. So you're looking at an image of Duke Ellington, but he's also trying to work on another aesthetic level and say, you know, I'm trying to do what the saxophone player does, what Ellington does at the keyboard with my paintbrush. If you look at the show with that in mind, it's so exciting. And also, since they're trying to say these are artists that went over there and found a freer context, there's a kind of bird. There's an almost Picasso-like bird flying all through the show, one piece after another, as if to say, hey, you know, this is the music of freedom. And, you know, let freedom ring through the whole show.
We're talking to Deirdre Harris-Kelly and Bob O'Mealy about Paris Blues Revisited at Jazz at Lincoln Center. There's a third curator, is there not?
Absolutely. I'm so glad. I was just going to mention C. Daniel Dawson, very well-known curator and scholar himself, and he's our third person. And then we also work with a designer, a graphic designer, who makes it all look really, really good. And she's to be given credit. Her name is Linda Florio. She works out of Florio Design Works in Midtown. And it was her idea to do this. You know, we kept trying to figure out how to present this as a book, but also as an exhibition. And so she came up with this idea of building a structure that looks like an unfolding book. Mm-hmm. So when you see it on the wall, that's to her credit. Definitely.
We decided not to blow the pages up and make them look like they might be murals or something that they were not. We preserved the sense of size that these artists first had in mind. And so when you walk along the wall, you're looking at something very close to what they were looking at when they worked at it. And Linda designed it so, just as Deirdre was saying, you feel like you're turning the pages in a book and seeing a fresh view every time you move your eyes from one page to the next. You know, I think just focusing on the music, Ellington was thrilled to do this because he thought the story was going to be different. But even despite that disappointment, for him it was a chance to experiment with a fairly new medium, movie score.
Mm-hmm.
So he and Strayhorn moved to Paris and they left the band back home. A lot of the recording for the record, for the movie, was done back in New York. But they came here looking at the rushes as they appeared and thinking, you know, how can we put this on the highest possible level? That's the way they always thought about everything. And so the score is a masterpiece. You have these wonderful mood pieces of nighttime in Paris, autumn in Paris.
In romance.
Walking for real in Paris again and again. We're just climbing those stairs at Montmartre up to the hill and seeing the church at the top of that and the Eiffel Tower. All of that is evoked in the music. And I mentioned the Bearden imagery because there's a piece that he calls Paris Stairs. Thank you. thinking about the movie, but he's trying to give you an oral impression of this imagery from Paris. And it's so very exciting. So even if we had no movie, just listening to the music, it's a very important piece of music. He also, Ellington and Strayhorn decide to showcase their challenge is how do we use the great Armstrong? And so they write a piece called Battle Royal, which is a very interesting piece. Another soundtrack. It's a masterwork.
Yeah, actually, there was one thing that sort of unnerved me about the soundtrack, actually having the physical soundtrack and the information that accompanied it. It didn't include information of the soloists and musicians that were on the score. Do you know whether that exists anywhere? Or
very funny you would mention it. There's a book called Duke Ellington's Film by Film and Day by Day, or Day by Day and Film by Film. And there's another such book. There's an Armstrong discography called All of Me, well titled. And you have to go to that kind of research tool to get this information. I think just because United Artists, for them, you know, just they didn't figure out really that it's important to know that Les Spahn is playing that guitar and that Ellington is using the flute, and that's Spahn again. It's very interesting. And then Johnny playing. So they don't tell you. You have to hunt for
Johnny
it.
Hodges.
Yeah, Johnny Hodges plays a tremendous solo on pieces called Parents Blues. But you have to dig for that information. You have to dig hard. But you can find it, though, if you use those special sources. Part of what's interesting there is that Ellington came to Paris and he uses some Paris musicians in the soundtrack. And then again, when he gets back home, it's Paul Gonzalez and others from the band. You hear Ray Nance coming through. But that mixture is very interesting, and you have to dig to find out what it is. But the reason is simply that the three of them, Strayhorn, Armstrong, and Ellington, were in Paris, and the band didn't travel with them. And so they were using local cats.
Have you heard anything about reviews of the score itself?
Yes. At the beginning, when it was first heard, it was heard in the movie, you know, of course. And several of the reviewers said, the movie is a drag. It puts down jazz. Thank goodness for the great soundtrack. Other reviewers sort of liked the movie, and they liked the performances of the actors, which I think are also very good. But, and perhaps without exception, the reviewers said the soundtrack is the thing. Don't miss that. That's the work that stands out.
Listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM. Sugar in My Bowl is the name of this show. Uh-oh, wait a minute. Okay. Well, that's it. This is what you were supposed to be hearing, and fortunately, you are hearing it now. Let me say that before this, we heard Battle Royale. What we're listening to now is Anatomy of a Murder. This is the theme from Anatomy of a Murder, scored by Duke Ellington. We'll be talking about that in a second. So thank you, Hank Williams. Thank you for all of your help. Hank Williams is my partner in this Sugar in My Bowl endeavor. And let's see what we got here. We have... we got all kinds of stuff. That's nice. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, we heard Battle Royale. A lot of the tunes we've heard so far have been from the Paris Blues soundtrack, as we discuss the exhibit at Lincoln Center, Paris Blues Revisited. Let's see, we heard Battle Royale. Before that, we heard Paris Stairs, Bird Jungle, Autumnal Suite. And then, you know, to the filler was actually a combination of CDs from Satchmo, a musical autobiography. We heard In My Solitude. It was an introduction to In My Solitude. Potato Head Blues, Clean Pickin'. Then we heard Clean Pickin' from Mary Lou Williams. And heard Nightlife from Mary Lou Williams. Before that, we heard Potato Head Blues from that Satchmo, the musical autobiography. Uh-oh, we should probably go back. Now, Duke Ellington had already done Anatomy of Murder?
He had done a few. He had done that, what is it called, Symphony in Black very early on. And he had done Black and Tan Fantasy.
Right.
A short movie. And yes, Anatomy of a Murder. And it's right during the same period. He was getting better every time at it, really learning how to integrate the, make the music sort of disappear at the same time that it was distinctive. You're going to a movie to see a movie, and you don't go there to close your eyes and listen to the music. So he was very aware of that. At the same time, he was asserting all the time, especially since the movie was itself, the storyline said otherwise, that this is a great form of art. And you could hear that, and the reviewers didn't miss it right from the beginning.
Now, is there information about other artists that Romare Bearden was listening to during this time?
Well, I can mention the Earl Hines connection. Bearden gives credit to his friend,
Stuart Davis.
Yes, Stuart Davis, in introducing him to the idea of listening to Earl Hines.
That's pianist Earl Father Hines?
Yes, and listening for sort of the spaces between the notes and in terms of intervals. And Bearden then translates this into the way that he works in his compositions.
WBAI, New York.
not only sort of working in an improvisational call and response, you put a piece down, you put something next to it, what does it call for, you put a red here, how does that red assert itself, but also about the intervals of these color, these forms, and the spaces, the kind of music sort of composition it was making within the 2D form. So Earl Father Hines gets credit for that.
You could just take, if you had the complete Bearden, which would be very hard to come by, even as a collection of pictures of them, but if you had a lot of them, that would give you an idea of the musicians that he liked. There's an homage to Mary Lou, indicating appreciation for her. Billie Holiday shows up a few times.
Icicles fall. What do I care if icicles fall? I've got my love to keep me warm. Off with my overcoat, off with my glove. I need no overcoat. I'm burning with love. My heart's on fire, the flame grows higher, so I will weather the storm. What do I care how much it may storm? I've got my love to keep me warm. Thank you. grows higher, I will weather the storm. What do I care how much it may storm?
Bessie Smith shows up a few times. There are lots of them of Duke and Louie. Mm-hmm. He obviously dug them to death.
Right.
And there are a lot of keyboards. And I think that the most important point is the one Deirdre's made, that he learned to listen to the intervals. And there's so many keyboard-like images. Even when he does a skyline, Bearden tells us at one point, those houses in a row, they make a keyboard. And if you look at the houses in one light, one dark, a little longer space, he's thinking about a piano. And maybe it's Ellington sometimes because he loved Duke so much. I think, but he also was friends, isn't this true, Deirdre, with Ornette?
Ornette Coleman?
Yeah.
So hate to talk over Don Cherry. This is Ornette Coleman from The Shape of Things to Come. Well, Shape of the J Word, Jazz to Come. And let's see, before that we heard, I Got My Love to Keep Me Warm, Billie Holiday. This is from a box set, a lovely box set. That is the complete collection of Decca Records. Before that we heard, Taurus. Since Duke Ellington's a Taurus, I thought I'd choose Taurus from Mary Lou Williams' The Zodiac Suite. And before that, we heard Changin' the Blues, Earl Father Hines. And before that, we heard Anatomy of a Murder, the theme. Let me hurry up and finish this. You know, the Jazzmaster, Charlie Hayden's on this recording, The Shape of Jazz to Come. Something to be pleased about. Let's see, before Anatomy of a Murder, Battle Royale, Paris Stairs, Bird Jungle, Autumnal Suite, Paris Blues. Stay tuned.
I thought so.
Well, I've never heard that, but that would make sense.
How so?
Well, I just feel like Bearden was listening to so much music, and if you look at his work, a lot of people like his work because it's very representational. It tells stories. It's narrative. But I would contend that Bearden is a straight-up abstractionist, even when he's doing, you know, something like The Block, which Bob was just referring to, where he does the city block of Lenox Avenue, and he talks about it being the keyboard. You got to kind of abstract the view from that and to really see that. I mean, he's not just talking about it literally. He is saying it looks like a keyboard, but he's also talking about the intervals and how things are set up along the block. So I could see him being a little way out with Ornette.
Yeah, and these things come together. In his autobiography, Ellington talks about jazz as a cubist music. And Bearden, too, is in his own way, isn't this right, Deirdre, a sort of cubist? Because you can see him.
Oh, absolutely.
Those rectangles and other geometric shapes in the background. And he's playing with that as much as anything else. You know, he wants you to think about this tilted shape and how to see things that way. The other thing that I love is that our friend Brent Edwards, a professor of English at Columbia University, gave a paper called Romar Bearden and the Politics of Generosity. And the point there is that Bearden was such a wonderful man. He would give things away, and he was so sweet to everybody, kind and generous. But he also, in his own work, welcomed you in. He said, oh, yeah, here's a picture of Bessie Smith. Come on in and take a look. But the more you sit there, the more you're aware of him as a colorist, him as a cubist, and him as somebody who works in late. And so he gives you everything you came for and then says, oh, yeah, while you're here, here's something else that you wanted too but forgot to ask for. It was so much fun to work on the show because and so much fun to work with Shaw's family. They had the scrapbooks in their archives, and to go in there and to see these pages that hadn't been seen by the public was just a thrill. And to find one after another. One thing, because some of the pieces are unfinished, it's almost like you're attending a rehearsal by a master musician, and you see a first draft and then the next one, and then the photograph is by Sam Shaw is put in place. And then there's his little writing on the side where they're thinking Murray's text will be. And it's wonderful to see some pieces that are finished and some pieces that are on their way to being finished. To me, it's jazz-like in that sense, too, that you can, the process of creation is so important. It's like you can feel Coltrane reaching for the chorus where he can get it said just right. Here, too, you have a sense, you know, that here's draft number one, which is beautiful, and draft number three would knock your socks off.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. I'm talking over Trummy Young. It's a bad thing. But I didn't want to talk over Louis Armstrong. Louis Armstrong. And I'm talking over Barney Biggard on clarinet. There's Trummy Young on trombone. Duke Ellington on piano. Louis Armstrong on trumpet. Matt Herbert on bass and Danny Barcelona.